So who originally asked the question, is it better for a leader to be loved or feared? It was, of course, Machiavelli in his classic work on leadership, The Prince. He came to the conclusion that being feared was much preferred after thinking about the violence of the Middle Ages and after being tortured himself in Italy for a time. Russia's Vladimir Putin retains that Machiavellian identity, which Dr. Keltner, professor of psychology at UC Berkeley, warns is just not sustainable. Joseph Stalin had to kill more than 10 million people in a terror campaign to stay in power in the Soviet Union. And a Baltic war for Vladimir Putin may not accomplish very much, says Professor Keltner. In his new book, The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence, Keltner makes the case that the skills people rely on to achieve positions of power, social intelligence, empathy, taking an interest in others, are exactly the traits we forget when power is achieved. Pride goeth before destruction, and power, which feels very much like pride in the moment, ends up resulting in self-destruction.
What we've learned is that as you're rising in power, and this probably sort of appeals to your listeners' feelings, you feel a little bit attentive and hypervigilant and even stressed out, right? And you're sort of looking at your environment very carefully to navigate it. But that all goes away when you feel powerful. And literally, there are neuroscientific studies showing if I feel powerful, the empathy regions of the prefrontal cortex are disengaged, right? You just no longer are thinking as carefully about other people.
Now, it's also the case that a lot of people who actually have power never get out of the vigilant stage, that they always assume that they're not making it even when they have made it. And of course, you know, there are psychiatrists who have made a handsome living in dealing with such people. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I think there are two different versions of that, right? So there's sort of the Richard Nixon version, which is the continual paranoia, and that's been documented scientifically. And then I think that the other side, the paradoxical side, if you will, is the kind of the humble approach to power. You know, it's funny. I got to work with Pete Docter on the film Inside Out, and I was the scientific consultant for the film. And I remember having a beer with him at the end of that film, and I was ready to sort of relish the experience, and he's like, he was worried about various problems in the film. He was thinking about his next project. Very critical, vigilant approach to the product. And I think that's part of why he's great, right? So it's good to stay humble.
Is there a scientific basis for distinguishing between a Richard Nixon and a Henry Kissinger? Kissinger, who for some reason, you know, committed in many ways the same crimes as Nixon.
Yes, he did.
And yet the outcomes were completely different.
And famous for the saying, you know, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac.
Yes.
You know, so one of the things that we've learned about the science of, from the science of power is that when we feel powerful or we're living a life of privilege, it tends to amplify our pre-existing tendencies, right? So Kissinger may have been a kind of an alpha, arrogant male to begin with, and that just amplified his sense of charm and seductiveness and the like out in the world. And I think power may have amplified a paranoia that was present in Nixon early.
So Nixon is really good at campaigning because he's got this skill of appearing to give empathy and tell people what they want to hear.
Yeah.
But Kissinger basically has this kind of stamp of, I'm already there.
Yeah.
I don't need to worry. I've got this.
Yeah.
Which is in some ways what institutions like Harvard deliver.
Yeah.
Because he was on the faculty. You know, it's almost they're delivering something to the brain as opposed to academia.
Yeah. You know, we've done a lot of studies of privilege, right? If you come from a well-to-do background, you have the prestigious job or you have a lot of wealth, the list of effects of privilege are not – they don't look good, right? You are more likely to lie and to cheat and to steal things and to shoplift and to have sexual affairs. But it also costs people – in terms of their innovation, right? They don't think outside of the box as readily. So I think there is this very paradoxical cost to privilege. John, one of the most striking things that we've discovered in the past 10 years is that we've learned that being disempowered really costs your nervous system. It hyperactivates the stress hormone cortisol. It just runs roughshod over your DNA and your brain cells, and it costs your life expectancy. There are various forms of disempowerment, social disempowerment, right? Racism, sexism, biases against your sexual identity Those forms of bias, prestiged bias against those who don't come from that background, cost people physically in terms of their health. So that's an argument for opening up the bastions of privilege to the disempowered.
You have a real problem with Machiavelli, or the Machiavelli metaphor, which is a distortion of the original Machiavelli, but it lives in our time. Describe that.
I do. You know, the prince, Machiavelli wrote in a very violent time in Florence, in Renaissance Italy, probably the most violent in human history, I think you could argue. He had just been thrown out of Florentine politics. He had just been tortured. He was in this state of really a self-recrimination. And he writes The Prince. And, you know, there are debates about whether it's earnest or not or sincere. But it is one of the – it's the most important book written about power in Western European history. And it's about force, fraud, and strategic violence, literally. And those ideas today in the 21st century with, you know, with Facebook and with a really critical journalism and ideas of individual rights really fail. And you know, it's very hard to find data that show that, wow, that Machiavellian strategy wins in the long haul. And most of the time, it is the undoing of people and social collectives.
Let's talk about the presidents. Would we be more likely to see a Donald Trump succeed or a Hillary Clinton succeed based on their rises?
Yeah. You know, all of this argument suggests that Donald Trump would be a disaster, you know, and I'm not the only one who's saying this. You know, when you abuse power up front, people are going to distrust you. If you're unpredictable, if you're hostile, if you're bullying, if you're racist, if you're sexist, you will lose that. You're going to have trouble leading those people. That's a lot of people. And I think, you know, people don't need to hear my opinion about Hillary Clinton, but I think her – what this election is in some ways fundamentally about is a shift, I think, in the moral majority to people really caring about inequality. And we've known this for 30 years, that there are a big chunk of our culture is not rising, and it's her job to speak to that. Mm. I'm not sure she will.
Dr. Keltner is professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, and author of The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence. Thanks so much.
It's been great being with you, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.